Okay, we're ready. It's great to see you all here. I trust you're interested in the sanctuary windows, and I'm glad you're in the right place. I'm interested in the sanctuary windows, and so it's great to see that other people are too. But that's what we're doing here today. Sanctuary windows, West End UMC. And I know you've all seen them, but there may be some things you haven't known about or seen, and I'm going to try to get some of those today. The thing up here is going to be paramount. It was originally described as a learning session up here, and then we go to the sanctuary and learn all about the windows. We're actually going to learn about them up here because we can get closer to pieces of the windows this way than we can in the sanctuary. But I will encourage you at the end of this to go into the sanctuary and look at whichever windows you want to look at. I think there are probably a few of you who've never been up in the balcony and looked at the Old Testament window closely, and you're going to find out that the Old Testament window is my favorite. And so if you can get up those crazy steps and get into the balcony, you can get closer to that window than you can get to the New Testament window or any of the other big windows on the sides. So I recommend that. The other thing I recommend is that you go in there not on a Sunday, but you come down here sometime when you're downtown during the week, and you go in there when there are no sanctuary lights on. And the colors through the windows are just worshipful. They really are. Okay, so I'm using photos through the years by these people. And this is taken from the balcony, and we all know what it looks like. We all face that window down there every week, don't we? Well, except those of you who sing in the choir, and then that's at your back. But we know that window, most of us, better than any other window. It's the New Testament window, and it comes complete with all these pipes, so it's really kind of neat in that respect. But it's also very beautiful at night or when it's backlit. There is a light back there in night services when it's lit. And however, we can't really explore the windows without exploring some of the history of the sanctuary. Some of you will know, and some will maybe not. Maybe you'll learn something. You may know this. You may know that the religious education building was built first. And that's kind of an interesting thing. That means that the church, in deciding to move out here, decided to build that part of the church first, the religious education building, rather than the sanctuary. Who does that, you know? Why would they do that? Well, because that's important. And so here's a picture of the church, kind of as we know it now, but this is the part that was built first, the religious education building. None of that other stuff was there. The cloister thing was not there. The sanctuary was not there. Those halls on the backside were not there. That's what was there, okay? And it was the religious education building. So here's the building committee back in this era. John W. Barton was chairman. Anybody know that guy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, some are descendants of the. He was chairman. Secretary was Alan Metters. Cornelius Craig was on it. A.B. Benedict was on it. Some of these names are very familiar. H.P. Murray and J.J. Gray. All guys, you know, that's who we had on committees back then. All guys, and there they were. All right, construction for that building began in 1928, and Sunday school began there in November of 1929. Some of you weren't around in November of 1929, and it was probably a good thing that you weren't, because in October of 29 was Black Thursday. And that started the Great Depression. So they moved into the Sunday school building right as the Great Depression hit. So we're going to get the sanctuary built next week? No, don't think so. So there was a delay in building the sanctuary. And groundbreaking wasn't until 8 years later. So we could go to Sunday school, but what about church? Well, people attended Sunday school here and then walked across the street to Neely Auditorium on the Vanderbilt campus to go to church. Now, Neely Auditorium looks like this, and it houses their theater, their drama department. But it was originally built in 1925 as a chapel. And this is a very grainy photo of it. It's the only one I could find. But you can look at that and see, chapel, can't you? I mean, it's not built for plays or anything. They're pews, for crying out loud. So people in West End, did Sunday school in our education building and then walked across the street to Neely Auditorium for worship services. I want to introduce you, those of you who don't know her, didn't know her, to Chris Tibbett. And there are a couple of reasons I want you to know about her. She died in 2017. I knew her pretty well. She was very much an artist. In fact, the whole art building at USN, at University School, is named for her. And she's the one who told me years ago, yeah, I remember walking over to Neely Auditorium. And if you can imagine, I mean, most of us now can't imagine trucking it across West End. It was a different era. There weren't quite as many vehicles on West End. And so as a girl, she walked across to worship and then came back. She also did all the sets and artwork for this show through the years of its existence. I don't know if you knew that, but all of those sets back there were Chris Tibbett designed. Now, I didn't want to highlight her for that, but to tell you that, well, okay. She had some good friends in that place too, as well as here. But I wanted to tell you that I think about Chris every time I'm in the sanctuary, because she designed and cast that cross. And for me, that's the kind of thing these windows represent. They represent a legacy. People before us left those, and we get to use them in our worship. So I wanted to tell you about Chris for that reason. All right, let's do one more personal story. This is my dad. He died in 85, so this is not my dad. This was my dad a long time ago. He grew up in Pensacola, Florida. He went to the University of Florida at age 16. Yeah, he was kind of bright. And he got a degree in math from University of Florida, after which he went back to Pensacola and worked in a furniture store for several years. Excuse me. And then he felt the call to ministry. And he came to Vanderbilt to get a Bachelor of Divinity degree, which is what you got back then if you were going to be a minister. And while he was at Vandy, and by the way, Chris Tibbett remembered him. She was one of the youth. Dad worked at West End as a student assistant, which is what we call an intern today, okay? And then, at some point, and this was in some archives in the History and Archives room that we scanned a few years ago, the Reverend Arthur H. Jones, Jr., that's my dad, I'm Arthur H. Jones, III, who has been a student assistant at West End Church for the past 2 years, has been employed by the board as assistant pastor of the church, his duties beginning in September. Mr. Jones has rendered very unusual service, and the church is delighted now to have his full-time service. I've read that a million times. What was that very unusual service? But they hired him, so it must have been okay. But anyway, so Dad was here for a couple of years. Then he went off to be his own minister, and he went to the Holston Conference, where he spent the rest of his professional life. Now, I'm going to give you an introduction to the Holston Conference, so you'll know a couple of things about why I'm connected and not connected. Here's Tennessee, and here's Knoxville, and here's Virginia. That's the Holston Conference. So Dad was minister in several churches throughout his ministry in the Holston Conference. I was born in Bristol. We lived in Clinton. We lived in Chattanooga. We lived in Radford, Virginia. We lived in Athens, Tennessee. Churches in all those places. I was never at West End until my wife and I decided to move to Nashville 40-some years ago, okay? So that connection with Dad was way in the past. But he was here at West End as the sanctuary was being built, okay? And then he was here as it was completed. So that's going to be part of the story here. Dr. Harrell, Carson J. Harrell, was the minister as the sanctuary was being built. And this is a picture of Dr. Harrell and his wife. And I think Paul and I had trouble remembering whether he referred to her as Amy Dear or Amy Darling. But it never was Amy. It was just Amy Dear or Amy Darling, right? Oh. Is this just water?
Yes, it's just water.
Okay, you're not trying to get me wound up or anything. Okay. Yeah, thanks. I don't want to spill it on my computer. I've had that happen. It's not good. But anyway, the Harrells were here, of course, as the sanctuary was being built. Nashville this week was a weekly publication in town. And look at this one. It's dated October 28th, 1929. Okay? So it's about the time that the Sunday school building was finished. And here's the architectural drawing, and what it says underneath here is what I've put up there. The new church, including the educational unit, West End, 23rd and Louise Avenues, from the drawings of the architect Donald W. Southgate. So there's the architectural drawing of our church. And some of you are pointing to it. I know why you're doing that. We'll come back to it in just a minute, okay? Here's the church bulletin from March of 36. And again, it has, you know, a drawing like that on the cover. That's the architect's drawing. Now, this is a photo of the church in 1953. What's missing? The bell tower. The bell tower's missing. We never got that done. And I'm here. I've got a basket back here. I will pass it in a few minutes. I'm kidding. But, you know, apparently we just didn't get that done, but that's okay. Boy, did we do well without the bell tower. Now, this is from a bulletin from February the 5th, 1939, and it shows a before and after kind of thing. The one at the top is 1 year ago, 1939, 1 year ago, and this is the entrance from West End Avenue into the church. Those two kind of pillar things on the sides are beside the two front doors. And you can see the scaffolding in there, and you can see there are guys up on the scaffolding. And as a kid, I remember my dad saying, and remember, we were in East Tennessee, we weren't here, but he had stories, and he said, you know, they were building this steel structure up there, and they had to have rivets to put it together with, and they had fires down here to heat up the rivets to the almost melting stage, get them flexible, and then they'd take a pair of tongs and toss them up to the guys on the scaffolding. And the guys on the scaffolding would catch them in a bucket and then drive them in where they were supposed to go. But every now and then, and you know, the atmosphere was kind of blue in there because of the smoke from the, but every now and then, one would miss and the atmosphere would get even bluer. So there was this thing called blue atmosphere that was kind of a joke around at that time. But Paul and I also remember that Every morning, Dr. Harrell would gather all the workers and have prayer. Okay? So this sanctuary was built on prayer. All right, that's from the top 1 year ago. And the bottom says, today. Ta-da. There it is. And notice at the bottom it says, to this point, 92% of the cost has been paid in cash. Wow, that's pretty darn good. Remember when this is, too. The first Sunday for worship in the new sanctuary was March 10th, 1940. Okay? But a few months before that, there was an event, and it was reported in that weekly magazine, Nashville This Week. Here it is. And it says, public to inspect West End Methodist Church Sunday. And notice the date, November 24th, 1939. And so I looked on an old calendar. But Sunday would have been November 26th. Okay? So, public to inspect West End Methodist Church Sunday, November 26th, when the first worship service wasn't going to be till next March, all right? But you could go in and see what had been going on. Now, keep in mind those months, all right? But if you had been a member of that church, of this church, then, and had been walking from Sunday school across to Neely, and had been seeing this construction going on, wouldn't you have come down to see in that public showing? Yeah, I would have too. Now, I want to show you a couple of things about this from the text down here in today. I'm not sure you can read that, so I'll read it for you if I can read it. In celebration of the nearing completion of the new West End Methodist Church, which has been under construction for more than 2 years, the new building will be open to the public Sunday afternoon from 2 until 5 o'clock. See, you got 3 hours. Dr. Costin J. Harrell, pastor, said today. Several who have been intimately associated with the construction of the new edifice will be present to explain the inner features whose construction they supervised. Ben Gamble, the electrical contractor, will explain the lighting fixtures. I don't know if you all pay attention to those, but they're neat, aren't they? Those hanging lights and the sconces on. All right, he's going to be there to explain that. And Donald Southgate, the architect for the building, will point out certain architectural features. Wow. The woodwork will be described by its creator, William Sutherland. So you got the real people there talking about those various things. We're not missing that. Next paragraph says, Arthur H. Jones, assistant pastor, will explain the symbolism of the figures contained in the great stained glass windows at either end of the church. When I was preparing to teach this kind of thing to 3 Sunday school classes last fall, I read that for the first time. And I thought, my dad, on this public viewing day, told him about the Old Testament window and the New Testament window, and here I am, now 83 and a half years later, telling y'all about it. Won't we get over it? No, can't get enough of it. All right, so one more thing in this column over here. The 2 large art glass windows, and it's talking about the New Testament window and the Old Testament window, are particularly noteworthy features of the new structure. Several Nashville artists have said that they are among the most beautiful in America. The windows were made by the DiCenzo Studios of Philadelphia, whose artists created the windows for the Washington Memorial at Valley Forge. It really is was a famous stained glass window producer, and we got them. Now, for that public viewing on November 26th, it's not clear how many of the windows have been installed besides the New Testament and the Old Testament. In fact, we know that several others had been commissioned but not installed yet, not quite made or installed. Others hadn't even been commissioned at the time. So you got a New Testament window and an Old Testament window and some window glass, all right, instead of the beautiful things we have right now. All right, I want to point out one more thing right here. And this paragraph says, the total investment, including the lot, the religious education building, and the church proper, is at the present time about $750,000. When the edifice is finally completed and equipped, approximately 85% of the total cost will have been paid, and the balance will be covered by subscriptions. There are a lot of stories about that, people, because this was in a time right after the Depression. $750,000 to buy the lot, build a religious education building, and the sanctuary. Now, for comparison, some of you were here 23 years ago, 24, 25 years ago. The windows, the big windows, needed work, a lot of work. They were about to fall apart. So we hired a company, and they brought scaffolding in, and they would take out each window one at a time, take it off, fix it, bring it back, and reinstall it. So it was over a period of a couple of years, and actually we had a rededication of the windows on April 6, 2003. Some of you have wanted one or have one of those booklets. We're going to have them available at the end of this. Those booklets were published back then when the rededication was happening. So the cleaning and repair of the windows cost around $900,000. My, how times change. $750 for the whole thing, $900 to clean and repair the windows. Okay, well, let's talk about the windows, okay? Finally, let's get to them. They were designed by Nicola DiCenzo Studios of Philadelphia, and here's Nicola himself. He lived from 1871 to 1954, so he's been gone a while. But he was born in Torricella, Italy, if you couldn't tell by his name. Came to the U.S. in 1882 at age 11. He's a little more than 11 in this photo. He studied art. He was clearly meant to be an artist. He studied art at Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, at Pennsylvania Museum and School of Industrial Art, and at the New York School of Design. And after all that, and after he set out on his own, he got two old brick houses in Philadelphia next to each other and set up studios in those houses. That's where our windows were created, in the DiCenzo Studios, two brick houses in Philadelphia. And it's really interesting because I found a magazine article for stained glass windows, and we give him a lot of credit, and he deserves a lot of credit. For stained glass windows, he'd make a rough drawing, but then he'd pass it to his designers. And he always said, if anybody asked him, it's a collaborative effort. And that's so much. Your workers really want to help you when you're giving them the credit too. And that's happening. Okay, so let's talk about our windows. That's what he did for windows in general. Now, let's first talk about a couple of definitions. We all know that's the New Testament window, okay? But here's a term you may or may not have heard, clear story windows. And that's what these are that are up high, okay? And I'm going to refer to that a gazillion times today, clear story. And it's, some people have pronounced it clerestory, but it's clear story. And it's not unique to our church or to churches. Some houses have a great room that's really tall, and they have some windows up here to let light in from above, and those are clear story windows. And that's what this basically is. It's clear story windows that are fancier than normal, okay? And then the aisle windows. Of course, we all know what those are. If you walk down either aisle, outside aisle, you pass by all of those aisle windows. Here's the Old Testament window. Look up in the balcony as you're leaving if you go out toward West End, and there it is. All right, here's a map. This is a map that you'll see in the booklet that you'll get. Here's the New Testament window. Here's the Old Testament window. Here's the West transept, and here's the East transept, and that's where you go when you go out to Reed Hall, right? When you're escaping, going to Reed Hall, you go that way. So there's kind of the map. All right, we're going to begin with the New Testament window. I know that's not the New Testament window, okay? That's the Old Testament window. But we're going to begin with the New Testament window. We've seen it a gazillion times. It's the Morgan window. The reason it's the Morgan window is because it's given by his family in memory of James Bedinger Morgan, who chaired the official board of West End for many years. We have the ministry table now. Back in the day, there was an official board, and after that, it was called the administrative board. And you can see plaques out in the narthex of the church that have all of the people who chaired the boards throughout, and the ministry table now. And James Bedinger Morgan was one of those. And so it was given by his family in memory of him. Of course, the centerpiece is Jesus. And what a great, lovely piece of glass, pieces of glass that is. The blues, yeah, he's got the blues. But the blues are just so gorgeous. And it's just like you think of him, I think, with the halo up there and his hand and his feet and the robe. Okay, that's the central part of it. But let's look at some other symbols in there. Book of Revelation, the visionary who ostensibly wrote the book of Revelation and is telling us all these visions he had, in one of them, he sees the throne of God, okay? And when he sees the throne of God, part of his description is that he sees four creatures around the throne. And I think they must be acting as guards, you know, keep people away from the throne of God. Here's the piece. Around the throne and on each side of the throne are four living creatures, full of eyes and in front and in behind. I'm going to pass out blue books in a little while and let you draw one of those. Full of eyes in front and behind. Okay, the first living creature is like a lion. Second living creature like an ox. Third living creature with a face like a human face. And the fourth living creature like a flying eagle. And the four living creatures, each of them with six wings, are full of eyes all around and inside. Day and night without ceasing, they sing, "Holy, holy, holy, the Lord God Almighty, who was and is to come." And that's John's vision of seeing the throne and the four critters around the throne, okay? First like a lion, second like an ox, the third with a face like a human face, and I'm going to go back to that in a minute, and the fourth like a flying eagle. And notice it says a face like a human face. It doesn't say the third is a human. It says like a human face, okay? Poor John, he's had this vision. He's trying to write it all down so we'll understand it. You've had a dream and tried to explain it to somebody. It's just hard to do. But that's how he describes it. Now, he's not the only one who sees a throne like that. In the first chapter of Ezekiel, there's a similar description. But this time, the four creatures, instead of being like a lion, like an ox, like a human, and like an eagle, each of the four creatures has four faces. One face like a human, one face like a lion, one face like an ox, and one face like an eagle. Boy, you wait till you get hold of that blue book and try to draw that one. Four faces? Okay. But anyway, after the New Testament was canonized, those four creatures began to symbolize the four evangelists, the four writers of the four gospels, okay? And here's an example of that. There are a gazillion examples of this around. But you see Jesus in front. This is from the Bury Bible, a drawing from the Bury Bible, and Jesus is there, but there's Matthew, wings and the face of a human. Don't call it an angel. It's not. It's the face of a human, a creature with the face of a human, and that represents Matthew. There's a lion with wings, represents Mark. Here's an ox with wings, represents Luke, and here, an eagle with wings, represents John. Okay, so those became kind of standardized symbols. And looky here, we got them. Don't call it an angel. That's a winged creature with a human face for Matthew. That's a lion with wings for Mark. And in case you have trouble with this on the exam, DiCenzo Studios put the names in there so you wouldn't have any trouble. Here's the ox, Luke. And here's the eagle with wings, John. So there they are, the four symbols of the evangelists all around Jesus in that window. How amazing is that? Okay, let's look at some other aspects of the window. Up top, I'm going to bring this forward. Some of the photos when they're blown up are not that great. In the center of this, there's this thing. And you've seen that before. Like, here's a cross with IHS on it. But it's not IHS. It's three Greek letters, iota, eta, and sigma. There they are, iota, eta, sigma, iota, eta, sigma, capitalized. And they are the first three letters of the Greek Jesus, Jesus, okay? So right there in the apex of the Christ window, of the New Testament windows, IHS, representing Jesus, Jesus. Okay, that's there. Then on either side of that are these two things. They too are Greek symbols, Alpha and Omega, representing the beginning of the alphabet, the end of the alphabet, but also the beginning and the end. For example, in Revelation 1:8, I'm the Alpha and the Omega, says the Lord God, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty. That's right there in our window. Also, here's another one that might come to mind when you're thinking about beginning and end. This is from the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The eternity of Jesus with God. That's in our Christ window, in our New Testament window. All right, some other things down here. This middle panel, toward the center, you got a moon and a sun. All right? So we got daylight and dark right there. And then right here, we've got angels, four of them. And they bless their hearts. They've got their hands folded. And they got their wings folded. And they look holy, don't they? They've got the halo, but they also have the flame of the Holy Spirit up there. How wonderful is that? Just gorgeous and so worshipful right there above Jesus. All right, down here, there are a few symbols as well. Here are two crosses, okay? And, I mean, what can you say? They're symbols of Jesus too. Down here is a sheaf of wheat and a cup of wine, communion, Last Supper. Symbolism in this magnificent window. If you can get close to it, as close to it as Leon Rader has gotten through the years. Leon was a lot of times on the back row or the next to the back row in the chancel choir, so he was as close as you can get to that thing. But I didn't see you look up that much. So if you want to go up there and see what you can see, do it. You still can't get very close to that window, unfortunately. All right, there's the New Testament window. Now, we're going to look at clear story windows. And remember, those are the ones up tall, okay, up high. Here's a view of one from the outside. And they're not that gorgeous from the outside because you just don't see the light in through the glass. But if you counted them, and I'll count them for you, there are 11 of them. Okay, 11 clear story windows. There's where they are. Now, clear story windows in our church have a lot in common. And I want to demonstrate that. I'm going to take three random ones and put them side by side. The Baxter window, the Cavert window, and the Dobson window. Putting them side by side. And just looking at them, you don't even really have to squint. They kind of look alike. The colors are a little bit different, and as we get close to them, you'll see that there are some differences. But basically, the shape's the same, the size is the same, the panels are the same. All right, taking the top and bringing one of those forward, look at the very top. What's up there? cross, yeah, symbol for Jesus at the top. And so that's at the top of all three of these windows in a Rose of Sharon, cross, okay. There are other windows, not these three, that don't have a cross but have a morning star up there instead. From Revelation, it is I, Jesus, who sent my angel to you with this testimony for the churches. I'm the root and the descendant of David, the bright morning star. Okay? So, biblically, the morning star is another symbol for Jesus. And so, there are mostly crosses up there, but some have morning stars. Here's another in the apex, a lily of the valley. And that comes from this, Song of Solomon. I'm a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. Okay? Again, another symbol for Jesus in the apex. So you could have a cross up there, or lily of the valley, a rose of Sharon, or a bright morning star. But they all look the same shape, and they all have a symbol of Jesus at the top. Now, let's go to this layer. We'll bring one of them forward. You see out here lots of crosses. Okay? And again, from window to window, they may vary some in color, but the pattern's the same. And in here, you see kind of a wave of stars, okay? And that's in all of those windows. And in the middle, you see, oh, shucks, two of those angels again with their hands like this and their wings crossed. And their halos, and a little flame up there. So the windows are tied together in a lot of ways, but we'll see how they're different in a few minutes. They have this panel. All of the clear story windows have this panel. And those are seraphim, not angels. You can tell the difference because of the wings. Now, I'll show you that. Isaiah, in chapter 6, sees this vision. And at the end, he's called to go to work, be a prophet. But he says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne high and lofty, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Seraphs were in attendance above him. Each had six wings. With two they covered their faces, and with two they covered their feet, and with two they flew. And one called to another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. That a magnificent vision. Now, it says seraphs here, and that is a transliteration of the Hebrew, seraph, okay? Seraphim is the plural, and we've adopted that. So if you see seraph or seraphim, you know we're talking about creatures with six wings flying around, right? The new CEB translates this as creatures with six wings. Doesn't say seraphim. But anyway, there they are. And there are three in this layer of each clear story window, no matter which window you're looking through. This one at the bottom, same thing in each one of them. It's really a pattern. There's not a lot of symbolism in there. And it's a beautiful pattern. And it's the same in each window, except the colors are a little bit different. There are more reds in some windows and blues in some others. Okay, each one also has a name at the bottom. Like this one is Maggie Sinclair Craig, okay? And those windows are, that's why I named that the Baxter and that the Cavert and that the Dobson, because those are the names at the bottom of them. And we'll go to that in just a few minutes. Now, that panel is the only one we haven't talked about yet, and that personalizes each clear story window. That's where the windows are different. I'll show you what I mean. Each of those panels has three things in it. One, two, three. One, two, three. And those things give three characteristics of the person or people memorialized or honored in the window, okay? And we're going to go through all of them, so you'll see how that works. We're going to start with the herald window. Remember, Dr. Harrell was the minister at the time the sanctuary was being built. And you remember Dr. Harrell and Amy Deer. So there is a Harrell window. It's not dedicated to them. It's dedicated in memory of their son, Julius Walden Harrell. If you do the math there, 20 years old. Yeah, exactly. Do you remember, was it a lung thing?
Cancer.
Yeah, some cancer. This young 20-year-old was taken, and he was the Harrell's son. All right, in the memorial, it says, of him, who in the strength of his youth, radiant with hope, eager to serve, entered into life eternal. All right, here's that panel for young Harrell. And over on the left, you see the cross of sorrow. In the center, you see the staff and scepter of strength. And on the left, you see the overflowing cup of joy. And those were the three symbols that were chosen to memorialize Julius Walden Harrell. Kind of almost makes you tear up, doesn't it? We see that Sunday. We see that window every Sunday. And that's what that means. Okay. It was given not by the Harrells, but by members of the congregation. And we can appreciate that too. Members of the congregation back then got together and gave this, in such a time, gave this window. Okay, Peterson Cavern. We got some people who know about this. In memory of Peterson Cavern, do the math. Ooh. And Peterson Cavern died overseas in the war. And who did he leave behind? A son that he didn't know existed. His wife was pregnant when he went over there. He didn't know. Yeah. It's one of those stories, isn't it? And we have descendants of those families here. Described as loyal in friendship, pure in motive, faithful to duty, he gave his life for his country. All right, let's look at the panel for Peterson Cavern. On the left, tree of loyalty. Clasp hands of friendship. Cornucopia of kindness. I know you're turning to your mom and dad, or you're turning to your spouse and you're saying, when I go, I want those in my window, okay? And they're saying, sure. Sure. Okay. It was given by his parents, Mr. and Mrs. Tillman Cavern, in memory of their son. All right, George Stove. This is a different whole set of things. George Stove was not young when he died. He was pastor of West End Church from 1918 to 1933. So he was through being pastor before the sanctuary was built, but not before the religious education was built. Greatly loved by the congregation. And here are the three characteristics of George Stove. Bowl and basin of servant. Remember Jesus washing the feet of the disciples? Wow. And there's a sheep and a shepherd's crook. Lamb and crook of shepherd. And then over here a scroll of preacher. You can't read it, but I'm almost positive it says, for God so loved the world. Okay, so that was given by members of the congregation in memory of their own pastor, longtime pastor. Dobson, we know these descendants, given by Sophia and Matt Dobson in appreciation of God's blessing in their children. How about that? Here we go. Matt Hughes Dobson IV, James L. Dobson, Lillian L. Dobson, John Moorhead Dobson, and in loving memory of their infant son, Moran Dobson. So these are parents who are giving this in honor of their children, both living and not living. Here's the panel for them. Over on the left, that really is a dolphin and its symbol of family, okay? And in the center, a heart and a white rose, symbol of love. And on the right, the sailing ship as a symbol of church. And that's how the Dobsons wanted to honor their children. Wow. Okay, Kirkland, in memory of James Hampton Kirkland, steward in the church, chancellor, Vanderbilt Christian teacher. Yeah, Kirkland Hall. It's the same guy. There was a real close relationship between Vanderbilt and West End in a whole lot of ways back then. But here's the Kirkland window, and here are the three characteristics of James Hampton Kirkland. On the left, a book, quill, and inkwell of scholar. In the middle, iris, for grower of iris. He must have loved that stuff. And then a builder, compass and square of builder. Okay, so those memorialize him. And they were given by Mrs. James Kirkland in memory of her husband. Wow. Maggie Sinclair Craig. In memory of Maggie Sinclair Craig, 1870 to 1945. She was the wife of Cornelius A. Craig, who was on the building committee. Modest, serene, steadfast, beautiful in character and life. And here are the three characteristics of Maggie Sinclair Craig. Hearth and fireplace of home. Flowers, love of beauty. Bible and cross of faith. Can you imagine what went on? When I was doing this earlier, Bill Beyer, who's an architect and has designed some churches and additions for churches, said that probably the studios said, okay, we're going to let you give three characteristics of your, you know, who you're giving this to or in memory of. And they come up with five. No, got to have three. And they come up with three. And then the studio makes a design for those three and goes back to the family and says, how about these? And they say, oh. Or they say, not that one. So there probably was some negotiation that went on through a period of time about these, but they're memorialized now. They're in stained glass this way. How magnificent. Given by Mr. Edwin Craig and Mrs. Douglas Henry, in memory of their mom. Okay, another one, an interesting gift. In memory of Nathaniel Baxter Jr. and Laura Lavender Baxter, inheritors of the traditions of the Old South and builders of the New. And here are the three characteristics of them. This one, I have to say, kind of cracks me up every time. Padlock of Prudence. I don't know who recommended that, but I like it. The Scales of Justice and the Pillar and Oak Wreath. You see the red oak wreath of strength. Okay, so those are the three characteristics of Nathaniel Baxter Jr. and Laura Lavender Baxter. And they were given by Mrs. Robert Jackson and Mrs. Robert Maddox in memory of their parents. It's interesting how some of these windows were given by the church in memory of somebody or in honor of somebody. Some were given by kids in honor of their parents. Some were given by parents in honor or memory of their kids. It's a mixture. Here's the Horn window in memory of William Lucas Horn, described as sincere in his faith, stalwart in his virtues. Here's the panel. The dove and lily of purity, the crown and palm of victory, and the dove and olive leaf of peace. In memory of William Lucas Horn. And it was given by Mrs. Horn in honor of her husband. I don't know if they're coming to take me away or what. Okay, we've examined these eight windows to this point. Now, let's go to these two in the west transept, okay? I just want to locate them for you. The windows we've just been through are the big ones going down way upside, up up above in the sanctuary, as you go down the sanctuary. We're going to the west transept now, and there are two there. One is the Keith window. It's in memory of Walter Keith, 1868 to 1935, who's known as generous in his judgment, constant in his loyalties. Let's see the three. Anchor and fish of hope, the cross and Bible of faith, and the flaming heart of charity, love. Faith, hope, and charity. These three for Walter Keith. How about that? And they're given by Mrs. Walter Keith in memory of her husband. How about that? Every time I think of this one, it cracks me up because I think, okay, this is in memory of Fred Composite, right? I mean, why would you call it a composite window? But it, in truth, is absolutely wonderful because it's dedicated to the glory of God and in memory of the persons memorialized in the old church building. When they left the church building at 16th and Broad and built this religious education building and then this sanctuary, they left some things there that were memorials to people. And so they're memorialized in this window. Holland M. McTeer, Mrs. Winnie Taylor Crowdis, L.P. Green, James W. Thomas, Dora Rankin, and Anna Claire Chrisman all had memorials at the other church, and now they've got a memorial here. They weren't left behind. And so here are the three characteristics they put in this window. Sickle of life's brevity, crusader shield of conquering faith, the cross on the shield, and the sheaf of the fruit of life for those people who were memorialized in the other church. Yay. And of course, this one was given by the church too. So we got several that were given by parents or kids or whatever, but we've got several that were given by the church. All right, so we've covered those. Let's get the last clear story window. And I'm going to guess this is one of the most unfamiliar windows to most people except maybe Becky Haywood up there. Anybody who's sung in the choir, in my years of singing in the sanctuary choir, I considered the Duncan window my personal window because of where it is, and we'll talk about that in a little minute. In a minute, but there it is, okay? And it's, I want to put this with other clear story windows to show how it's different. It looks the same when you first look at it, but if you put it in with the Baxter Cavern and Duncan, I mean, put the Duncan in with Baxter and Cavern, you can see, one, it's smaller. Two, the middle panels, see that one has six middle panels and this one has kind of a long middle panel, but only two on it. Bless its heart. And there's a reason it's smaller and kind of like that. We'll go back to that in just a second, but let's look at it in detail. Now, if you get where you can see it in the church, you're going to have to be in the choir loft, or you can, like, here's the nave, where the nave is, and here's, if you're heading out to Reed Hall, you go out through the door right there. There it is up there. There's an aisle window right there that's at eye level, but the Duncan window's way the heck up there. So you got to really be alert and looking for it. It's kind of tucked away. There's a reason it's up there. It's the choir window. We can see it from the choir loft easily. All right, let's talk about it. In memoriam, Whitten Duncan and Harry Butorf Duncan, his son. So this is in memoriam for a guy and his son who, and we're talking about the son here, who, having answered the call to Christian ministry, was, in the morning of a promising career, called to the church triumphant. Here's another one who died young. This window is dedicated to the dad and the son being called to ministry, but died at a young age. All right, let's look at the top of this window. Here is the Rose of Sharon, okay, another symbol of Jesus. So we got Jesus in the top, just like we have in the other clear story windows. I'm a Rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys, okay? So that's up there. That makes it okay. We have one seraph. The other clear story windows have three. But at least we got one in this one. We have two angels. And the other windows have only two angels too. But their two angels are side by side. These are split. And you'll see why in a minute. So it is different. Now, where these have that band of three characteristics, here's the band on the Duncan window. It's there and it's there. So it's not just a cross and it's not just three. That's where the Duncan window beats the heck out of the others. It's got more symbols. All right, let's talk a little about those. Here it is kind of blown up. But it says Duncan at the bottom, of course. And then at the top, Harry the son studied in Scotland. And the thistle, Scottish thistle, signifies his preparation for ministry. Okay, that's one symbol. Here's another one just below that one. The shield of faith and sword of spirit. Two characteristics. Here's the third characteristic. Remember, the other windows have three, and this is the third one. This is the torch for the minister as light to the world. Third one. But we get to go on. Here's the fourth one. Ah, the open book, symbol of truth. And a fifth one. Ah, the fleur-de-lis, symbol of purity. So we've got five symbols in this window. And it was given by Mrs. Whitten Duncan in memory of her husband and her son. And you all look at it sometime because you may not have seen it before. And it's there. And Mrs. Whitten gave it for her husband and her son. There it is. It's also noted that the window faces Vanderbilt. It's the only one of the clear story windows that faces that way. But that was Duncan's alma mater. Ha. Huh. So, it's okay. Now, we're not going to spend any time really on the aisle windows because they're all the same except for tiny details. And they're all at eye level. So you can walk by them and see the memorial plaque. And you can also walk by them. And a number of them, most of them, have quotations from the Bible in the top section. This one, for example, has, "The Lord is my light and my salvation, whom shall I fear?" Right? And so there are a lot of those aisle windows that have that kind of thing. So we're going to dash up to the balcony for the Old Testament window. I told you this, I'm quite prejudiced. I like this window best of all for a couple of reasons. One is my education, my PhD is in Hebrew Bible. And two is this has more symbols in it than any of the other windows in the church. And if you haven't gone up to see it, you've got to. There are great stories behind this because the window is given by Wade C. Owen to the glory of God and to making beautiful his house. Wade C. Owen was not a member of this church, didn't go to this church. In fact, might not have been a member of any church as far as we know, right? But he got collared by a couple of people. And there's a little bit of a dispute as to who collared him. Bill Beyer thinks his grandfather did. And Paul thinks it's Costin Harrell who did. But we know that Bishop Harrell, Dr. Harrell, talked to Mr. Owen. And Mr. Owen said, okay, what can I do? And Bishop Harrell said, how about giving this window? And he did. And it's a magnificent memorial and honor. At the very top where we have symbols of Jesus everywhere else, not here. This is the Old Testament window. This is the Hebrew, Adonai. And it means Lord or my Lord, Adonai, okay? My Lord. And it's one of the names that's used in the Bible, not name, but addresses used for God, okay? So Adonai is at the top, not Jesus. Over here, we've got kind of an altar with flames, and then we've got a ram caught up in some thorns. What's that story? Abraham and Isaac. Abraham asked to sacrifice Isaac in the last minute. There's a ram tangled up in the bush, and he gets to let Isaac go free, right? Okay, so this altar and ram symbolize Abraham's near sacrifice of Isaac. And so, hey, this is the Old Testament window. Abraham gets up, gets a place. You're going to get this one. I'm not even going to have to say anything. This is a harp and the Star of David. See? Told you I didn't have to say anything. So who does it represent? Very good. Very good. You're going to get one right on the exam. I'm probably not even going to put that one on the exam. All right. So we have up here the Lord, or my Lord, and we have Abraham, and we have David at the top of this Old Testament window. That's appropriate. In this area, which I'll bring forward, we have seraphs. How many of them are there? Six seraphs. Clear story windows only. Okay. Six seraphs in this one. We saw them in the clear story windows. But they had three. Old Testament winds. Okay. So, having made that point, let's move on. We're going to take a brief detour here. And there's a reason for this detour. You're not going to see it to begin with, but you will see the reason for this detour. I think most of us tend to think of our Old Testament as being the same as the Hebrew Bible. And our Bible then has the New Testament on it. And the Hebrew Bible is the Old Testament. And it is and it isn't. The contents are basically the same, but the grouping is different and the order is different. For example, the last books in the Hebrew Bible are 1st and 2nd Chronicles. Who would do that? But anyway, that's part of my point. They are the same, but they're not the same. And I want to distinguish the prophets in our Bible from the prophets in the Hebrew Bible. Here are the prophets in order in our Bible. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and our favorite Malachi. Right? Okay. Got them. The prophets in the Hebrew Bible are Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, the 12, and Daniel. The 12 is a book, but it's a composite. And see, they've got Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel, just like we do. But what happens to all these others? Well, they get melded into the 12, except that if you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There are 11 over there. How do they get into the 12? Well, because they had Jonah in. Okay? So in their the 12, it's these 11 plus Jonah. Okay? Now, I did that for a reason, because we call these the major prophets, and we call these the minor prophets. And that's not dissing them or anything. It's just that, well, that's the way it is. Take that. But what about the windows? Well, let's go back to the Old Testament window. And we're going to look at these panels next. This one, bringing forward. And look, it says Isaiah and Jeremiah, two of the major prophets. The Isaiah one has tongs and a live coal, because in that Isaiah 6 call narrative, one of the beings brings a live coal out and touches Isaiah's lips with it and says, you're purified now, you'll be okay, you can go on and prophesy. Okay, and the Jeremiah thing is a little puzzling, but there's a tradition, not in the book of Jeremiah or in the Bible, that Jeremiah lost his life when he got stoned to death. So anyway, this is the Isaiah story. One of the seraphs flew to me, holding a live coal that had been taken from the altar with a pair of tongs. Seraph touched my mouth with it and said, now that this has touched your lips, your guilt has departed and your sin is blotted out. And then there's this tradition that Jeremiah was stoned to death. Isaiah, Jeremiah, these two. Ezekiel and Daniel. The Ezekiel one, people that love Legos will love this, because Ezekiel was told by God through a vision, I want you to take a stone and on that stone build the city, a model of the city of Jerusalem. Here it is. And you, O mortal, take a brick and set it before you. On it portray a city, Jerusalem, and put siege works against it. Build a siege wall against it and cast up a ramp against it. Set camps also against it and plant battering rams against it all around. And it was to be a model of what was going to happen to Jerusalem, okay? And so there's the Lego model that Ezekiel made, okay? Now, I'm not even going to try to explain the Daniel one. What's that about? The lion's den. That's not going to be on the exam either, because everybody knows that. All right, so we have the four major prophets here, in those windows. Now, we're going to look at this set of windows next. Three sets of four panes. Do the math. Three times four is 12. Those are the 12 minor prophets. How about that? So we've got all four major prophets and all 12 minor prophets and Abraham and David in symbols up here already. All right, let's take kind of a quick look. In this one, those are the symbols. This one, Hosea, Joel, Amos, and Obadiah. I'm not going to try to explain each one. There are too many to explain, but you can get that later. In the middle, Jonah. You know Jonah. Micah, Nahum, and Habakkuk. Oh, you know Habakkuk, don't you? No. And then the final four on the right. Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Did I tell you this window has a lot of symbols? It does. We're not through yet. Look in the center. These two things in the center. On the left, there's a boat. There's a rainbow. There's a dove with a palm leaf above the boat. And under the boat, there's water. That's Noah. Yeah, that's the story of Noah. And on the right, look, there's a flaming bush up top. There are two tablets with the commandments on them. And there's a mountain with smoke and everything on it. Who's that? Moses. Burning bush, getting the tablets, Mount Sinai. Yeah, Noah and Moses right there in the center of the window. Now, here's one that'll get you because it's not straight across or anything. It's in the shape of a V. I'm going to bring that forward and point that out to you right here, down and up. See those symbols right there? All right, those represent the 6 days of creation. Day one over here, God created light and darkness. These you can get up close to in the balcony, and they are very striking. They're beautiful. This one, day two, sky and waters. Day three, seas, land, and vegetation. Day four, sun, moon, and stars. Day five, sea critters and birds. And finally, day six, land critters and humans. There they are, the 6 days of creation, right through there. And again, if you get up close to them, those panes are just spectacular. So all we have left are four panes down at the bottom, okay? Can you stand a little more panes? All right, let's try the one on the left. A Trina serpent. Where does that come from? Yeah, Adam and Eve in the garden, right? It's the fall of humanity. Right, Adam and Eve in the garden. The tree and the serpent around the tree. You don't want to get too close to that one. This next one is the Ark of the Covenant. Remember, they built, made it out of gold. They made poles so the priests could carry it. They put two winged creatures on top with their wings supposed to be touching. They are touching up there. And they put the laws of the covenant inside the box. God's mercy, representing God's mercy. Here's the third one. There's the temple. Hey, it's West End. It's where we worship, right? Now, the fourth one, it's the big reveal, because I know you've seen this a gazillion times in your West End life, and I bet some of you have no clue that it came from the Old Testament window. There it is. It's the cross, and it's down there in the corner, the last one, so that the whole of the Old Testament, all those prophets, Abraham and David, Adonai at the top, Noah and the flood, Moses, all of that leads to the New Testament. But it's kind of buried down there. You have to look for it, but you've seen it. You've seen it. It's been used for a number of years now in various places. You can see it even on the office door signs. People's name and that little cross flower on it. So that's it. The Old Testament leads to the New. Well, that's the sanctuary windows, West End UMC. This is my dad, you'll recall. And Dad used to have a saying that he had several sayings I grew up with, but this was one of them. As they say in church, sanctuary much. I want to tell you what's coming next and what isn't coming next. Initially, this program was designed for us to learn a little about the windows and to go into the sanctuary and really see the windows. Honestly, we got up closer to a lot of things in this than we could in the sanctuary. If you want to go to the sanctuary and look at the windows, do that. If you don't have time today, please carve out some time during a daytime in the week when nothing's going on in the church but play school, day school, and meetings and such, and you can go into the sanctuary and the lights aren't on and you can see these magnificent windows and the light streaming through and remember the people who gave them and the people in whose memory they were given. And that legacy is ours, but we are also not just heirs of the legacy, but we are to pass on the legacy. Many of you have a booklet, mine's around here somewhere, of the sanctuary windows, and there are more of those that are available for you, anybody who doesn't have them, out here. I think Rob's gone to, they've gone to get them out. They're out. Okay, all right. So please, if you don't have one, grab one of those. It's got all the information except about my dad in it about the individual windows. So please be sure you grab one. Take it home with you. If you want to go to the sanctuary and compare, do it. Enjoy them. Thank you. Appreciate your being here. I love this stuff.